I'm going to read to you from Genesis chapter 1 and starting at verse 11. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. May God bless his word to us this morning. Well, turn your Bibles to Genesis and chapter 1, and we're going to take up from verse 11 that Stuart read a few minutes ago. I've called the sermon Filling. Last time I was here, it was back in June, and we looked at Genesis 1, 1 to 10, as you'll be able to remember, I'm sure. And we looked at how God had created the world from nothing. The fancy word that you may hear bandied about is ex nihilo. From nothing. God created the world out of nothing. And it was amazing. We have an orb and it's suspended in space. We have a sky and we have seas. We left halfway through the passage. We spoke about the third day. The house was built, as it were, but it was still to be filled. It was still to be furnished. The furniture wasn't there, nor were the people. And that's where we begin today, still in the third day of creation. So the first point, day three to six. So come with me to verse 11, chapter 1. The earth brings forth vegetation on the third day, fruit trees.
each had seeds. Each seed then reproduced according to its own kind. That's what Moses says. Now, I'm no scientist, but I've tried to grow apple trees from apple pips and cress from cress seed, and not surprisingly, an apple pip grew an apple tree, and a cress seed grew a cress plant. It is not surprising, is it? The same principles are still ongoing today. Now, God sees that this is good. We have what's becoming Moses' usual formula. God's observation followed by the end of the day and the beginning of the next. Imagine them. The world is now green and orange and blue and white and covered not with dark water but with lush vegetation. And this is great. And now we come to verse 14. But there's more. There's more. The fourth day, God is going to decorate not the earth but the sky with the greater and the lesser lights. What we call the sun and the moon today. Moses doesn't call them the sun and the moon in order to avoid any possibility of making them gods. Already in Moses' time, when Moses was writing this, there were people there who worshipped the sun and the moon as gods. So you have the greater and the lesser light. We have the sun. We have the moon. We have the stars in what would become later their constellations. If there was a person to see this, it would be mind-blowing. You can imagine a dark canvas. Suddenly it's peppered with lights. The light now has an explanation. It's the sun, a mass of iridescent gas. The moon, a reflection of the sun. The stars, they're twinkling in their billions. We're surrounded by wonder. I heard a brilliant fact, the other day, statistic, was that if the distance from here to the sun, from us to the sun, is the thickness of a piece of paper, okay, the nearest star to us would be a stack of paper 70 foot high. He's a God of wonders, isn't he? He's a God of wonders. God's creating a masterpiece. A masterclass in creation and formation. Remember, God is simply doing this by the voice that he speaks. He speaks, and they're there. It's the end of the fourth day. The furniture is in. The carpets, the wallpaper, the light bulbs, the standing lamps. And we see the theme of forming and filling taking shape. So now we're coming with me to verse 20. Each day brings more animation with it. And now we come to the fifth day. And for the first time, we have self-conscious creatures. Self-conscious creatures. Birds that fly, fish that swim. Thinkers, that's what creatures means. Animals that are self-conscious, they think. And it's full. It is fullness. The waters, they swarm with swarms of living creatures. It's almost like Paul in the New Testament. He has superabundance language. Okay, it's not great, it's super great. The glass isn't full, it's overflowing. That's what Moses is telling us here. The world is great, it's full. They swarm. The birds don't just fly. What do? They fly across the expanse of the sky. Everyone according to its kind. Maybe it's with hindsight and with the advantage of having seen the last 200 years obsessed with evolution, but do we not have a clue here that creatures were created to reproduce in their own kind, not across kinds? You don't find fish becoming people. You find fish becoming fish. And then there's that positive declaration by God. It's good. For the first time, God blesses. What does he bless? Well, Moses was writing Genesis to take a swipe at other false religions. It's always good to do that. God speaks where other religions had to resort to magic. God separates the waters, where in other religions it was an effort to do this for their gods, for God is just a word. Well, God blesses the creatures and takes notice of the great sea creatures, verse 21. Now, in Canaanite myth, that's where the Israelites were going to Canaan, big sea creatures, they represented chaos and an enemy against their god Baal. They were scary. These sea creatures had power over their gods. That is bizarre, isn't it? Here, God creates the sea creatures and blesses them. It's his creation. He is powerful over such. Again, how great is our God? How great is our God? So, we have variety. We have creatures that swim, creatures that fly. We have many of them. We have them blessed by God. And we have God's command that they reproduce plentifully. If the world had remained as such, the world would have been incredible. But there's more. There's more. The fifth day ends. There's evening and morning. God has filled the air. And God has filled the sea. But the land remains empty. God has so far let the water produce fish, air produce birds, and the land produce vegetation. That's how Moses records it for us. So come with me to verse 24. And now the earth produces something else. It's kind of like a surprise family reunion. What do I mean? More and more people come through the door. Remember, my mind's gone today. With the red book, with Eamon Andrews. This is your life. Do you remember this is your life, those who are old enough? And you've just got more people come on the stage, and more people come on the stage, and more people come on the stage. More family members come through the door. Old school friends, relatives from Australia. And just when you can take it no more, yet more people arrive. So what do we have here? Well, we've got livestock that can be used. We've got creeping things like beetles and spiders. But you see, it's before the fall, so they're furry and cute. And we've got beasts of the earth. We've got wild animals. Now there's those amazing whales. And those amazing dragonflies and eagles. And now lions and tigers and elephants and giraffes. And we're only into the first half of the first chapter. And we're seeing God in his creative glory. This is the backdrop of the whole Bible. Unless we realize how great God is, then we will never realize what a horrendous thing it is to rebel against him. Unless you're actually convinced by this passage here that God is glorious, then you will never realize how much of a sinner you really are. So here he is again, declaring his might and his power. And now we come to the second point, which I've called day six. Profound. Come with me to verse 26. So if we stop here, we would have every reason to praise God. Yet stopping here would be like stopping at the starters when the main course is just around the corner. The creation of the earth, the creation of the seas, the land, the creation of the animals were not just the main reason for creation. As we come to verse 26, at first it may appear that here was just another part of creation. But a deeper look will see that here is God's masterpiece. I had a friend who collected vintage cars. It's because we're from South Cheshire, you see, that's what we do. You saw him walk around and he'd show you his showroom. He'd show you his Ferrari. Seriously. He'd show you his Ferrari here. And he had a Formula 3 car there. And they were impressive. But then in the corner, in an oxygen bubble, to preserve it from rusting, was undoubtedly his pride and joy. His 1960s Aston Martin that he'd done up from scratch. That was his pride and joy. Well, verse 26 brings us to the pinnacle of God's creation, if you like, God's pride and joy. And that is mankind. How does Moses show us this? There's difference. There's difference. This difference makes mankind valuable. It gives mankind a dignity that other part of God's creation do not have. It gives humankind a value, an identity. In opposition to those who say that we come from primordial soup and therefore are here by chance, here's a few sentences which proves that we have a purpose. It fills us with a purpose. And Moses does this by contrasting the way God made creation and the way God made mankind. Verse 26, up until now, God's creative command has been, let there be. And now it is, let us make. There's something incredibly intimate about this. God is intimately involved in such a way he hasn't been so far. No, there's a plural, let us make. Well, who does he speak to? He's God. There's nobody else being created yet. Well, a few theories. One of these is that God is addressing the company of angels. The problem here is that in verse 27, we have God creating man in his image alone, not in anybody else's image, not in the image of the angels. One of the most persuasive ideas is that here God is referring to the Trinity. We're in the first chapter of the first book of the Bible, and we have the Trinity already. He speaks to the other persons of the Trinity, us. You find similar references in Psalm chapter 2, verse 7. Write it down, look it up later. Matthew 11, verse 27, where the second person of the Trinity, Jesus, is speaking of himself as being linked to God the Father in a way that nobody else is, ever has been, or ever will be. And then we have references where Jesus accepts the term God for himself. Most famously, when Thomas calls him my Lord and my God. Jesus doesn't say, no, I'm not God. Because he is God. My Lord and my God, says Thomas. And Jesus basically says, yeah, that's me. That's me. The word used for God here is Elohim. It's the same as used in the first verse of Genesis. So let us make rather than let there be. That's the difference. And then in accounts of the creation the previous 5 days, everything is created according to its own kind. According to its own kind. Here though, mankind is created what? How? In the image. Or another way of putting it, after the likeness of God. And we're going to unpack that in a minute. Again, there is intimacy here between God and mankind that hasn't existed between God and his creation. Previously, gender was not important. Here, the stress is on the different genders. Male and female, he created them, verse 27. From the beginning, we have difference. Men and women were made different, not from each other, but different for each other. Okay, it's not a negative, it's a positive. Get this, and the debate on gender today is kind of a non-starter, isn't it? Right here at the beginning is this idea of difference being at the forefront of creation. And it is a good thing. It's a good thing. And now mankind is to have dominion over God's creation. Dominion has the idea of royalty. An idea of presiding over a kingdom as the king does over his subjects. There's a difference between mankind and the natural world. There's a charge for mankind to care for and look after its subjects. The animals, the world. This is emphasized even more in verse 28, when mankind is not only to have dominion, but is to subdue the earth, to bring it under mankind's control. But this is in a loving way. It's in a loving way. It's kind of not drill baby drill way. Isn't this so practical in the way that we're to look after the world today? Now, come back to verse 26. And one of the greatly discussed phrases of the Bible. Animals were made after their own kind, but man is set apart as being made in the image of God. The word image is not used often in the Bible. So its precise meaning is difficult to understand. And so there's a few ideas. But when it's used in the Bible, it is simply, as you may understand it now, as something which has the characteristics of something else. Yeah, the image of something. He is the image of his dad. Yeah, he has characteristics of his dad. A clue as to this phrase and how Moses used it can be found in Colossians chapter 3 in verse 10 to 12. Here Paul's describing what it is to have been raised with Christ. If you're a Christian, you're raised with Christ. Paul talks about that in Romans chapter 6 wonderfully. What it is to have been raised with Christ. In other words, what it is to be a Christian. And he says this: do not lie to one another, because you're a Christian now, seeing that you have put off the old self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Do you get that? Being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, as Christians, holy and beloved. Put on compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness and patience. In other words, become the image of God. What is it to be renewed after the image of the Creator? What is it to be renewed after the image of the Creator? It is to be made like him. Is it not to have his characteristics, as Paul lists? Hey, not perfectly, because we're fallen. Also, in the time that Moses was writing, it was common to use the word image to describe a king who was seen as the representative of God. He was the image of God. He was God's representative. And it's possible that Moses is picking this up and saying again that there is a distinction between us and creation. We are God's representatives on earth. As God's image on earth. We are to have dominion. We are God's representatives on earth. So if you put these two ideas together, and you have mankind as representing and ruling God's creation almost as a king, whilst also exhibiting godly characteristics which are from God and therefore in his image. Christian, that's you. Now we have mankind created with this perfect moral compass. In all perfection. The very pinnacle of God's creation. And as with the first living creatures, what does God do? He blesses them. There are instructions as with the animals to reproduce, but unlike the animals, mankind is to rule. In his love, God provides food. He communicates with his creation. And we have paradise. And that's what Moses wants here. We have paradise. We have humans created to enjoy perfect communion with God in a perfect world. I wonder whether you ever watched Open All Hours. Nod if you did. Just give me some. Yeah, we got one. Yeah, cool. Yeah, okay. For those of you who never watched Open All Hours, I'm not sure you missed too much. So Open All Hours is a sitcom in the 1980s about a guy who owned a corner shop. Ronnie Barker played the shopkeeper. David Jason played his assistant. Whatever. So you've got this a corner shop. And it just shows you that the day's going on. It's very amusing, very comical. It always ended with Ronnie Barker's character. He's kind of the shopkeeper with his brown coat on. It always ends with Ronnie Barker's character coming out of his corner shop at the end of the day. And he's surveying his little kingdom with a voiceover. So the camera pans up there and you see Ronnie Barker down there. And he's speaking. And he's reflecting his thoughts of the day. And it's almost that reflective voice that Moses gives us here. A sense of completion. The earth is formed, and now it's filled. Order is set, and relationship is established. The furry little cockroaches are playing cutely with those lovely little mosquitoes. Everything, but everything, is perfect. Verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. And so God surveys and sees all he has created. And it wasn't just good as the previous 5 days had been. Moses tells us that God's judgment, that it was very good. That it was very good. That was God's judgment on his creation. It was the best it could be. And so the scene is set. And God shows his mercy in that even though we live in a world that largely rejected God, certainly a country that has rejected God's goodness, yet we look and we see still in acts of kindness the image of God in mankind. It's not perfect, it's fallen. We're going to come on to that in 2028 probably. Yet we look and we still see this image of God in mankind. We see the superiority of man over the animals as man continuing to have dominion as he was created to. We see in marriage God blessing male and female. And as beautiful as the countryside is, and as amazing as animals are in all their variety, and now we can look at the pinnacle of his creation, because he or she is sitting next to you. And we should see in the intricacies of our bodies, in the intricacies of our relationships, of our minds, we should see something of the greatness of the Creator. And this should lead us to worship. This should lead us to worship. Not the created, but the Creator. But the Creator. And we're going to do that now as we sing and as we worship God in our final song, our final hymn. 10,000 Reasons, yes. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Worship his holy name. Sing like never before. I'll worship your holy name. We're looking at creation. We're seeing what a glorious God that we have. Hey, when we then look at the fact that we fell and that creation was ruined and that we rejected God, but yet still he enabled us to worship him through sending his son into the world, that makes us even more amazed at God, doesn't it? Doesn't it? We'll stand if you can and we'll sing. We pray once again.